Welcome to the Partners in FinCrime podcast in association with FSCom. My name's Evan McGuigan.
And I'm Richard Dunlop.
In this podcast series, we'll be looking to discuss all things anti-financial crime.
We will be deep diving into cutting-edge stories as well as other interesting topics in the financial crime space.
In this episode, we discuss the payment system regulator's incoming FPS reimbursement requirements, as well as what it means for firms. Hey, Rich, how's it going?
Yes, very well. Evan, how are you? How are you keeping?
Yeah, not too bad. Not too bad. How's life?
Life is good. What about yourself, Evan?
Yeah, so there was a good number of us at Pay360 last week, which is always a fantastic event in the Excel Centre in London. I think we had maybe five or six of us over, and it's obviously the Payment Association's flagship event, really. So always a good opportunity to see people in person, bump into a lot of the faces that you often see either just through Microsoft Teams calls or put some faces to some email addresses, but also a really good opportunity to sort of make your way through the conference floor, have a look at what vendors are up to these days. A lot of the reg tech providers are often presenting what they're working on. So saw a lot of good presentations on the AML KYC side of things, some interesting approaches to verification using AI and different new ways of verifying identity, which was pretty cool. A lot of good keynote speeches as well. A couple of members of Parliament at a few sessions, John Penrose MP being one of them, who spoke quite well on the regulatory perimeter. There was quite an interesting panel discussion on the recent change to the PSRs as well, on the change to faster payment, the FPS, faster payments, and how firms can, from a regulatory perspective, hold payments now for up to 4 days, making faster payments slower in cases of fraud or suspected dishonest activity. That was a bit of an ongoing thread through a lot of the keynotes, actually, how firms can deal with fraud and so forth, which I guess is maybe quite an elegant segue into what we're potentially going to be speaking about today.
Yeah, absolutely. I was thinking that's a good segue. So as you mentioned, we've decided on the topic today, which we've kind of touched on previous episodes, and in fact was quite a big, you know, point of the last episode of fraud and how much it's overtaken and how much it's a big talking point for the year. So we're going to finally talk about APP scams and the reimbursement requirement. So just to set that out, that's authorized push payments, and we'll go into that a bit more, but it kind of comes off the back of the payment systems regulator, the PSR, setting forth this industry engagement sessions that they're going to be running in the lead up to the implementation. So these are engagement sessions which are going to be held on a fortnightly basis. Unfortunately, registration for those sessions are effectively closed as of the recording of this podcast on the 26th of March, and an information will be published about due course. But effectively, they want to discuss different areas of the policy. You know, obviously, the industry wants to know more and how this is going to affect them from different angles. But so they'll talk about scope, the obligations on the PSPs, division of liability, consumer standard of caution, vulnerability, and complex claims, along with other topics. So that'll be really interesting to see how the industry and the PSR can engage together and start to kind of build out what the policy statement may look like when it is implemented. So Evan, I thought that was a good chance to maybe discuss the APP scams reimbursement requirement in a little bit more detail, give a bit of a background to the policy statement and to the consultation, and just to really hash out exactly what we're dealing with here, what the types of fraud are, what the reimbursement requirements will be, and what that would look like, particularly in the faster payment kind of systems, etc., moving forward.
Agreed. Sounds good to me. A particularly meaty topic, and maybe we'll only be able to skim at the edges of it. But I think it's a good one to speak about now. It's due to come in, obviously, in earnest in October. So there's still 7 months or so to go, but things are moving at pace. And I think if people, firms haven't been thinking about what they have to do to get ready for it yet, then I think, you know, it's definitely time to start. So where do you want to begin?
Well, I suppose maybe let's begin at a few of the things are why. I suppose the why is the first thing. Why is this on the radar of the PSR? And I suppose there's a simple reason for that, and that's APP fraud has quickly become one of the most significant types of payment fraud globally. And obviously there's reasons for that. You know, the pandemic, the world online as we see it these days, the criminals being able to manipulate systems that we use on a daily basis and set up these types of scams which people are obviously vulnerable to. And then the types of customers who do use these types of systems that are out there, and all of that has built into what has become a seriously profitable marketplace for criminals to feed on our vulnerabilities. And so that's essentially the why of why this reimbursement requirement has come in. I suppose, Evan, would it make sense to go even back to the beginning and talk about maybe a couple of examples that are set out in the policy statement as to what an APP fraud scam might look like?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, yeah, to your point, the policy statement gives us a few nice examples to put a human face, I guess, almost to why this is being done and why firms, well, why the PSR is trying to incentivize firms to do more to ultimately prevent fraud where they see it. So APP, obviously authorized push payment fraud, one example that they note down here, which I'll read out for you. But a customer sees a holiday advertisement on a social media platform. They click the link on the advert, taking them to a website that appears completely legitimate. The customer decides to purchase a holiday and does so via a bank transfer. A few days later, after not receiving much information and becoming increasingly concerned, they realize that they have been a victim of fraud. The customer then suffers a loss of £4,500. There's a second example too, and this is a particularly pertinent one with the proliferation really of romance scams. I think we've all become quite aware in the industry of how this has grown to become a fairly significant fraud typology. But the PSR sets out in their example, through a dating app, a customer is befriended by an individual who lives in a different part of the UK. Over a few months, they build what appears to be a genuine relationship. And in time, the individual says they've fallen ill. They're struggling to cover their living costs. Concerned, the customer sends multiple payments to help pay these costs. Requests then follow for money to fund a visit to the customer. And after the customer sends numerous payments, the customer realizes that they're never going to see the individual who, you know, as it turns out, is a fraudster. The customer suffers a loss of over £10,000. As I say, that's something that I think we've all seen on, on LinkedIn and in industry as well. The proliferation of romance scams, and they've been potentially quite conservative with that 10,000. I think we've all seen romance scams online where people have been done out of, you know, 50,000, £100,000, and so forth on that. So there's two separate examples. The typology is ultimately, you know, the same, insofar as a customer has been tricked into sending funds to a beneficiary who is not themselves on a fraudulent basis for an underlying reason which you know appeared legitimate at the outset but turned out not to be. And this is the ethos, I guess, of the PSR's FPS reimbursement requirement. It is to incentivize the payment industry, first off, to invest further in end-to-end fraud prevention by making payment firms responsible first off, for the cost of reimbursing this type of thing, because we have to realize that none of this can happen without payment rails, without PSPs being involved in the process. It's the way of the modern world. But, you know, I think maybe there's a wider point here too, which maybe we can go into, which is, you know, should payment firms necessarily be the only people on the hook?
To go back to maybe the first example, Evan, there's obviously a few players in this. You've obviously the customer here who's making what they consider to be a legitimate payment. You've got the fraudster on the end of this who's receiving the payment and obviously not going to be providing any services or products to said customer. You've got the PSPs, the payment service providers in the middle, who are facilitating the payee and the payer, the connection between the two. But of course, it's important to remember that there needs to be something in the middle that's driving the scam. In this sense, it's a website. It's a fake kind of travel agency website. On the second example, it's obviously a person who's creating this kind of through a dating app and an illegitimate relationship, so to speak. So I suppose maybe one of the questions that might be put forward in the sessions with the PSR are, how much are these kind of websites or marketplaces such as Facebook? Now we're looking at Facebook kind of marketplace, we're looking at eBay, we're looking at Vinted. How much are these kind of websites and other marketplaces liable for facilitating these scams and these frauds?
Yeah, exactly. There's so many parties to this, I guess. You can see the reason why payment firms are the firms that are coming into scope for the liability here as the last line of defense, is because they're the regulated firms, right? But there is a wider discussion to be had potentially in the future on what more can be done with the likes of your marketplaces, your Facebooks, eBays, your Vinteds. What dating apps can do more? I don't know what the answer would be, but what they can do more to try and stop apparent fraudulent activity starting in their sort of ecosystem. But with the payment firms being ultimately, you know, critical to the flow anyway, and ultimately the last line of defense, if not in a real sense, they shouldn't be the only line of defense, but they are the last line of defense. So you can see as regulated firms why the focus has sort of landed on them. It's the only realistic way that I think, I guess, from a UK Gov perspective, that it can be done. That's ultimately the ethos of the PSR's approach and their focus on ensuring that payment firms do more to ultimately prevent facilitation of fraudulent transactions. As you say, they're focusing on faster payments, and that's because it's ultimately the type of payment in the UK which is most frequently used by fraudsters for APP purposes. The trick's in the name there, right? Faster. So get the funds, get them dispersed onwards, and the fraud is broadly complete. I saw this statistic here too, that payments resulting from APP fraud represented less than 0.1% of overall FPS volumes back in 2021. But FPS was used for 97% of APP fraud payments. So that goes to show the extent to which FPS is the fraudster's payment rail of choice. And this is why the PSR has ultimately focused on FPS to bring in the reimbursement requirement.
Yeah, and it's exactly that, Evan. Just from the policy statement, they have, obviously there are considerations to other payment systems such as CHAPS, and they are committed to achieving comparable protections, but very much so that this initial policy statement is very much focused on faster payments. But like I said, it is obviously on their radar for the future.
Absolutely. So certainly one to watch this space, and I'm sure we'll see it replicated across other payment systems. And indeed, I think I saw a reference of the potential for a consultation at EU level to bring in some level of equivalent requirement. So again, I know we're obviously focusing on the UK here, but potentially something for non-UK regulated firms to watch as well. So I guess at a fairly high level then, obviously the FPS reimbursement requirement, it brings in a lot of new requirements for firms. It's not just the reimbursement requirement, although that's obviously potentially the the most material change that's coming in, but there's a lot of supplementary requirements that go alongside it. At a high level, though, the incoming requirement's going to require firms, payment firms, to reimburse all in-scope customers who fall victim to APP fraud as it relates to qualifying transactions for APP fraud purposes. Firms are going to have to share the cost of reimbursing victims 50-50 between the sending firm and the receiving firm, and aligned, I guess, to consumer duty and vulnerable customers. There's also going to be a requirement for firms to provide additional protections for vulnerable customers as part of this whole process. As I say, the reimbursement requirement's the biggest piece, and that really places a requirement on the sending PSP. So the PSP that operates the payment account from which the payment is sent. So in the travel example, the person who wanted to go on holiday, the sending PSP who holds the account for that person, where they're notified of an incidence of APP fraud by that customer, and the fraudulent payment is a qualifying transaction using FPS, the sending PSP will be required to reimburse the victim for the value of that payment up to a maximum value, which I believe is set at 415,000 sterling. Whilst the receiving PSP, so in essence, the PSP that operates the account into which the payment is received, so the PSP at which the fraudster holds their account, will be required to share the cost of that reimbursement requirement. So in the instance of the 4,500 payment for the holiday that didn't materialise, the sending PSP, where it's informed of successful fraud, will have to reimburse the victim for that 4,500, and then the receiving PSP will have to essentially reimburse the sending PSP for half of that. That's, I guess, the reimbursement requirement in a nutshell. But there's all sorts of caveats around this as well, which the payment systems regulator has set out in fairly detailed writing in their policy statements. But there's all sorts of notification requirements on both the victim as well as the sending PSP toward the receiving PSP. So the sending PSP obviously has to reimburse the scam victims, except where a consumer standard of caution exception applies, or where a time limit applies on any claim. So you can see already a few additional pieces coming in. What is the time limit requirement? What does the consumer standard of caution exemption look like? The sending PSP too, where they receive a report of an APP scam, has to notify this receiving PSP within a specific time period to maximize the likelihood of retrieving stolen funds. And there's claim excesses that come in too, the maximum level of reimbursement come in too. So there's quite a lot in there for firms to get a handle on, and quite a lot of processes that have to be built around it.
Yeah, exactly, Evan, and that's a really, really good overview and lots of takeaways. I think effectively the policy statement suggests that it's underpinned by these 10 key policies. And this is obviously what was mainly discussed in the consultation in September. And the policy statement then sets out whether what's been addressed in the statement aligns with the consultation. And I think these are going to be 10 of the key points that are going to be discussed in these fortnightly sessions with the PSR and industry. And these are the likes of the reimbursement requirements for APP fraud within the system. There's a few caveats there about where the reimbursement required does not actually apply. Obviously, the sharing of the cost and the time periods around that. A key one, especially, is the exceptions for APP fraud claims, because this is something, of course, where firms are going to have disputes around whether they are liable for certain claims, with, unfortunately, the solving of a key issue. Unfortunately, people can latch onto that and create a new fraudulent issue. So one of the first exceptions will be where the customer has actually acted fraudulently. And you can probably think of that going back to those two examples, whereby the customer and the end so-called fraudster are in cahoots with each other and effectively are processing a payment. Obviously, those funds then get taken away, And then, of course, there needs to become the settlement of that payment between the two PSPs. So that is the first exception. Now, again, how that's all going to be looked at and how that goes into the kind of claim and disputes part of this, we'll have to see. And the second part of the exceptions is where the customer has acted with gross negligence. Mm. And so this is the customer standard of caution for APP fraud claims. So again, what gross negligence is to be considered will, I suppose, become a little more clear as these meetings materialize and we move towards the implementation side of things.
Yeah, I know. I think that will become clearer. They did set out a broad view on what that consumer standard of caution may look like, which they break down into four categories, which is the requirement to have regards to interventions, the prompt reporting requirement, the information sharing requirement, and the police reporting requirement. Maybe starting off with the interventions one, and gross negligence is quite a high bar to get to, but when firms are figuring out how to ultimately assess these claims, I think this is obviously a really good place to start, seeing as it's coming from the PSR themselves. But things to keep in mind: customers should have regards to interventions made by their sending PSP or by a competent national authority such as the police. These interventions must clearly communicate the PSP's or police's assessment of the probability that an intended payment is an APP scam payment. So, number one, if the customer has been informed either by the sending PSP or the police that the transaction is likely to be an APP scam payment and they've proceeded anyway, then that could potentially constitute gross negligence. This will be an interesting thing for people to see where the PSR lands in these engagement sessions, and particularly as we get closer to October, because there had been some mention previously that a blanket, you know, we've all seen these blanket notifications when you're on your banking app or whatever, where it says, you know, are you sure who you're paying to? Are you sure this isn't a scam or whatever? I think the PSR's current view at last review was that type of thing wouldn't meet that threshold of an intervention where if a customer goes ahead, they'd be grossly negligent. That intervention needs to be tailored to that transaction in question. So what does that look like? Well, you might need to design some level of transactional analysis, risk analysis model, where you can accurately, you know, pick up on trends or risk indicators and specifically inform specific clients where specific transactions, you know, maybe a potential APP scam. The prompt reporting requirement, obvious one, but, you know, customers, when they learn that they've fallen victim to an APP scam, need to report the matter to their PSP no more than 13 months after the last relevant payment was authorized. 13 months doesn't seem like a particularly long time period to me. I know in the instances that the PSR's example sets out, the romance scam and the travel insurance scam, that could be quite immediate. But in an example of an investment scam, for example, where, you know, somebody's expecting dividends after a certain time period, you know, they may find out slightly later and that value can be quite high. But yeah, 13 months, if somebody gets in touch more than 13 months later, then it may not qualify. The information sharing requirement: customers need to respond to any reasonable and proportionate requests for information made by their PSP to help them assess the reimbursement claim. Quite obvious, but if the customer isn't acting in good faith, isn't, you know, engaging in the process to enable their PSP to help assess the claim, then things may fall down and won't reply. And then lastly, the police reporting requirement. So customers should, after making a reimbursement claim and upon request by their PSP, consent to the PSP reporting to the police on the customer's behalf, or request the customer directly reports the details of an APP scam to a national competent authority. So I guess maybe that ties it back to that whole first party fraud piece. But, you know, if a customer is reaching out to you to claim they've fallen victim to APP fraud, and they're not happy for the PSP to report it to the police, or they're not happy to report it to the police themselves, and you get that threshold breached, then the reimbursement requirement wouldn't apply, presumably because it might indicate towards a bad actor, your client, your customer being the bad actor. So there's a few broad outlines anyway as to what the consumer standard of caution might look like. But as you say, I think this will be an ongoing piece to see how it lands, because as is always the case with these almost principle-based requirements, once real data, once real customers, once real situations start going into these things, you know, there can often be a bit of flex.
Yeah, exactly. Is it worth kind of finishing up, Evan, to just think about what our customers, I suppose, our clients and the PSPs that we're working with should be thinking about ahead of this, and what kind of systems and controls they should be considering looking at implementing, any MI that they can start to look at, which may help them before obviously this all gets implemented and is live.
Yeah, absolutely. I guess the mention of MI is a really good one, actually, right? So before, well, everybody's going to have to put in a control framework to deal with this regardless, but a good place to start is have a look at how your business model is predisposed to APP fraud in the first instance. Have a look at how many instances of APP fraud you've seen, your ability to identify them, and how you deal with them once you've received them. So it's FPS reimbursement. So say if you only did cards and you had no FPS, then obviously you wouldn't be particularly predisposed. But have a look, have a think about, you know, how your control framework is currently set up to deal with these things, how predisposed you are, how exposed you are to all of this new stuff. And then I guess in a look forward position for me, there's a few things everybody's going to have to do, but you're going to have to implement a control framework to manage the receipt of information first off. So this whole process, and I know we like to talk about data sharing and information sharing, this whole process is going to only work and will entirely rely on the ability for PSPs to talk to each other. So sending PSPs will have to get in touch with receiving PSPs. Receiving PSPs will have to get in touch with sending PSPs. All PSPs will have to be able to get in touch or be reachable by victims. Fraud reports from the victims, fraud reports from other PSPs. You're going to have an ability to manage all that additional information coming in, triage it, disposition it, be resourced to adhere to any SLAs you set on all that type of stuff, which is probably a bigger piece than maybe you would ordinarily think. And that's just for the receipt of the information and then the initial investigation. Secondly, you're going to have to put in place a process to process reimbursements and comply with that new obligation. You're going to have to be able to make an assessment of the risks around proposed payments. You're going to have to tie in your assessments of vulnerable customers and be resourced and agile to be able to evaluate each instance on a case-by-case basis to determine whether or not, for vulnerable customers, for example, their vulnerability led to them being defrauded, because that affects the whole reimbursement requirement as well. And even in a financial sense, you know, firms are going to have to make sure they have sufficiently liquid capital to be able to absorb any additional outlays as part of this. So in my mind, and I say in my mind, but and that's just to deal with the base dispositioning of all this, right? So receipt of information, case-by-case analysis, processing reimbursements, so on and so forth. And let's not forget why this requirement's coming in. It's to incentivize the payment industry to build their fraud prevention tooling, enhance their fraud prevention tooling, make it harder for their clients to fall victim to fraud, but also make it harder for fraudsters to open accounts with victims and receive funds in. So in a broader sense, and it's probably the most important thing, consider your fraud risk mitigation framework. Consider where it's weak, consider where it should be enhanced. And that's, I think that's sort of been forgotten a wee bit, that secondary piece.
Yeah, it's a really good point. Great. Well, Evan, that was really, really good advice and something for firms to take on board. I mean, the expected policy outcomes, just to take it back finally to the PSR, obviously, like you said, the end game for all this is to reduce the level of APP fraud. And with that, that brings about improved protection for victims, so to be consistently reimbursed for losses. And obviously, it does incentivize payment firms, like you mentioned there, and reputational incentives as well as financial incentives. And then finally, increased confidence in the faster payment system. Mm-hmm. So probably, like you said, when you look at the stats, albeit that the small percentage of APP fraud, it is generally driven through the faster payment system. And I suppose that goes back to what you were talking about at the top of the podcast, where you mentioned that a big topic at Pay 360 was this lengthier holding of the payment to be able to make these investigations. So all about increasing the confidence in the UK faster payment system.
Agreed. All very worthwhile objectives.
Excellent. Well, look, Evan, does that kind of round up what we wanted to discuss today? And hopefully there's a few key takeaways for firms. And obviously it's more of an ear to the ground as the year moves on, isn't it? With these various engagement meetings that are happening, obviously, as we drive towards October.
Agreed. Yeah. I think probably a good informational sort of dump for now. And then, yeah, as you say, ear to the ground, start your assessments, start your prep. Start considering what your framework should look like. And yeah, I'm sure we'll be talking about this a good bit more as we squeak closer to implementation day.
Yeah, absolutely. Excellent. Well, as always, Evan, it's been a pleasure, and thanks again for joining.
Likewise, really enjoyed it. See you later.
See you later.